The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome once again to the Computer Corner. It is the Data Doctors in the house, the Data Doctors du jour, Ken, Clay, and Robert.
How's it going, Ken?
Good. Fully energized.
Great.
We got our Tokyo Express in, right?
Yep.
Good to go.
Very tasty.
Got a little green tea caffeine going for myself, so I think we're ready for all of you out there to learn a little bit about technology today. We're going to discuss our topic of the day, but of course the most important thing is we're here for you. Whether you have a question about a problem you're encountering, or if you're looking to purchase a new piece of technology, or you just got one and you can't figure out how to get it to work.
That's what we're here for.
We are here for you. 602-277-5827 is the phone number. Right now is the best time to call in. You may have to stay on hold for a little bit, but right now all the phone lines are open, because from this point on they generally jam up, and lots of people out there with lots of needs. 602-277-5827. If you're more digitally inclined, you can join us online. Data Doctors, because that's us, datadoctors.com/radio will take you right to today's show. And at that show page, you will see today's topic with all of the resources so that you can educate yourself about today's topic, which is a very important topic we'll touch on in a moment. More importantly, if you have a question, you can also ask it in the feedback section. There's an Ask a Question or General Comments button. You just click on it. Instead of using emails where we have to try to filter through, we have you use the form so that we know it's actually a human, and it gets right to us here in the studio.
Important.
So we'll try to answer some of those questions on the show or on the air if it's prudent, and if not, we'll try to answer them throughout the week. Again, 602-277-5827. What am I doing? I always say that after the lines are all booked up. One line open, actually. Today's theme, very important theme, very, very important theme, identity theft. But we're not going to take the normal approach of, you know, the scare tactics about, oh my goodness, you know, your identity is going to get stolen, you're done. We're going to take the tactic that there are facts and there are myths. And I think there are a lot of myths that we want to try to dispel about identity theft. And with any luck, we'll arm you with education, knowledge, tools, and a better sense of how to manage the online world, technology in general, and the biggest threat to your identity, which has nothing to do with computers and the internet. So we're going to dispel some of those myths that that's where you're going to get your identity stolen. And of course, if you're one of those folks that has actually been a victim, I'd really like to try to find two different identity theft victims.
Yeah, no, that
one
that
from
would be
a long time ago when really the whole world was still trying to get caught up on how to fight this and manage it and regain your identity. And maybe somebody more recently that got their identity stolen, but it wasn't that big of a nightmare. That statistically and from just from all of the research that I've done, it seems to be credit card companies, banks, the credit bureaus, everybody is more focused on this issue. And there are easier channels these days to regain your identity as opposed to, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when it was, you know, it's not my problem, it's not my jurisdiction, I don't know what to do.
There are quite a few tools and resources out there.
There are. So we're going to talk about all that as well. And, of course, those of you that have experienced any kind of identity theft, your experience for the rest of the listeners, very valuable. Very, very valuable. The one statistic I want to start the show off with, though, is the one I put on the show notes. And that is that you're still most likely to get your identity stolen, be a victim of identity theft, as a result of the old-school, low-tech methods to gain information about you. Stolen wallets, stolen product, you know, breaking into your house and stealing things, dumpster diving, businesses that aren't real good about shredding records, that kind of thing.
Which I think is really actually kind of a surprise for most people. I think the majority of people out there would really think it would be the other way around.
Statistically, and this is one of the links that we have today, but according to statistics that I've been looking through, You know, obviously there's a lot of companies out there that benefit from people freaking out about their identity being stolen online and the computers and what have you. So
the online monitoring.
Right. I mean, so there's a lot of people out there. Right. So there's a lot of people out there trying to sell services, and they're using a lot of scare tactics to try to say, well, it's your computer and the internet's the biggest threat. You know, let's put this stuff in here. The reality is you're four times more likely to have your identity stolen through the old school method of some piece of information being removed from your control. On a piece of paper or something of that nature as opposed to on the computer. Statistically, it looks like, you know, everything that I'm looking at, it's actually safer for you to use the computer for a lot of transactions. Now, that's predicated on you taking the proper precautions, and that's really what we want to touch on today is, one, let's reduce this fear that people have that anything I do on the internet, I can connect anywhere and people are going to see everything I'm doing. While that certainly can be the case in very rare circumstances, that's not the case in the vast majority of the cases. And we'll tell you the things that can happen to everyone out there listening and what you can do about it and how you can figure out, you know, is there possibly something in my computer I should be concerned about and what to do about that as well. So that's kind of where we want to go with this. And, of course, any and all questions you have, we'll take them. We'll see if we can't answer questions like Bob has about encryption. Right, Bob?
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Now, let me ask you on the ID theft thing. Have you or anybody in your inner circle, have you ever been impacted by identity theft?
Not me personally, but I've worked with two people now that were impacted by it.
And how long ago was this?
Wow, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
It was probably pretty nightmarish, right, for them to regain?
Oh, God, yeah. It was like it changed their lives.
Right. So I'm hoping to hear from somebody that just recently went through this because I'm pretty certain, just from all the statistics, it's going to be easier. But
it hasn't gotten any better.
Well, actually, I think it's gotten a lot better because the people that are out there that are going to help regain things or, you know, for instance, it's no big deal now to tell your credit card company it was a fraudulent transaction, right? There was a time when you had to jump through a bunch of hoops. So, in fact, I get calls from the credit card company all the time. If I happen to be traveling on a business trip, they're calling, or I've actually had my credit card shut off.
Just to confirm, you know, any purchase overseas. You know? Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a whole lot more awareness all the way around. I think that's helping. So your question is on encryption.
Yes, I've been doing more, speaking of that subject, Matt, I've been doing more and more of my financials and banking and insurance and purchasing over the internet, and I noticed that there's a variety of different encryptions used by HTTPS, like RC4, 128-bit, AES-256, 168-bit, 3DES. Should I be concerned about which one's being used? Is any one of those? The most popular seems to be RC4 128, and I've noticed that.
Well,
according to some of the research I've done, that's not all that good.
Well, here's the bottom line. Any encryption out there, given the proper motivation, there are people out there that will figure out a way to break the encryption. The good news is you're one of, 100 billion transactions a day. And the cool part is you get to look at in the mirror and go, well, what makes me so special? Why are they targeting me? And they generally aren't going to be targeting you from the standpoint of trying to break the encryption. So don't get too caught up on, well, this encryption is more powerful than the other, because at the end of the day, the site that you're visiting is going to determine which encryption you have to use in most cases.
Right.
Right? So the only encryption that you need to worry about is if you were going to start to encrypt your email messages or things of that nature.
No, nothing like that.
But if you're just talking about like the browser encryption.
Right, going to the banking site
The bank is going to determine. Right, they're going to determine which. So you'll notice some banks will not work with some browsers. So they're specifically set up to work with the browsers and that browser's encryption level. So if you have an older version of the browser that doesn't have the level of encryption that the bank requires, then it won't allow you to connect.
Which is
why all my stuff's pretty well up to date.
Yeah. So I guess the bottom line is you don't have to geek out on this one. It's like you don't have to spend any real time if that's what you're talking about, trying to get onto your banking and
Concerned about, you know, which one is best and which one might be more subject to cracking.
But it doesn't matter. You don't get to choose if you're talking about connecting to the bank.
That's true, but I mean, wouldn't at some point in time you say, well, I don't want to do any banking online with this outfit because they're using that funky old RC4128?
Let me turn this around and turn it into a business discussion. I'm going to put you on hold for just a second, okay? Because
okay.
I want you to understand all of this.
Sure.
From my perspective, at least. There's a business model that basically tells you shouldn't have to worry at this level. So hang tight, Bob. We've got a couple lines open, 602-277-5827. Our first break, the Data Doctors will be back right after this.
Are we Facebook friends yet?
Get the news delivered where you live.
On Facebook, Twitter, text messaging, and all the time at KTAR.com.
that little green kiosk. You've seen them in just about every mall in the valley. You might have, while walking by, heard that little voice in the back of your head say, I wonder if this really works. What could be so difficult? Drink a little tea. Lose a little weight. It does work.
After seeing the results a family member had with Green Tea HP, I started drinking it. I went from a size 10 to a 6, and after having kids, that's a welcome result.
Green Tea HP. It's not like drinking whatever bottle of green tea you pick up at the local convenience store. You couldn't physically drink enough to get the same benefit. When you drink Green Tea HP, it's the equivalent of drinking 50 cups of green tea in one sitting. Green Tea HP in 8 delicious flavors, including the new caffeine-free fruit punch. Try it free at the Green Tea store in Scottsdale Fashion Square Mall, Chandler Fashion Center, or in Arrowhead Mall. Try it. You're gonna love it.
The PGA Tour Superstore is lowering the price of golfing in Phoenix, and it has everyone talking. Tom from Chandler writes, I've been using the same clubs for years, but recently my game has been slipping, so I brought my clubs to the PGA Tour Superstore. They evaluated my swing, adjusted the loft and lie, and put on new grips, and in the process, saved me the expense of buying new clubs. Justin from Gilbert shares, my boss asked me to play golf, but I'd never golfed before. I decided to learn fast. Your associates were amazing. They helped me find the perfect set of clubs for my game and my budget. Guys, if you want a Father's Day gift you'll actually use, tell your family to shop at the PGA Tour Superstore. For those of you looking for the perfect gift for Dad, a gift card from the PGA Tour Superstore is the perfect gift. The PGA Tour Superstore. We're lowering the cost of playing golf. Convenient Phoenix area locations in Chandler and Scottsdale.
Well, another chip in the windshield. Had SafeLight back out of the house last week, fixing a chip this time in Nancy's car. It's the second time they've been over in just the past few weeks, and at least the sixth time in the past couple of years. Bobby did the work this time. Had this cool, high-tech chip fixer. In fact, it's equipment only SafeLight has.
We patented this, actually.
Here's what you never want to do. Let some guy at the car wash or in a parking lot somewhere work on the glass in your car. I don't care how pushy they are, how many free dinners they say you'll get. The work can't match SafeLight. In worst case, it could be a scam, insurance fraud. You call SafeLight in the morning, and your windshield will be fixed that day. They come to you, home or office. Look, I've trusted SafeLight for years, and you can too. Call them at 1-800-800-ASAP, 1-800-800-ASAP, or book online at SafeLight.com. SafeLight, nationwide, lifetime warranty, skilled professionals, the best equipment. It's the only call to make. Call SafeLight.
Hey, if you're into digital photography, you probably once in a while like to think, hey, maybe I'd like to touch this thing up and do a little something with it, but I don't want to spend the money for Adobe's Photoshop, $700, much less go through the learning curve.
Oh, God, and that's quite a curve.
It is a curve. So if you are a subscriber to our newsletter, the tip of the week is a link to a free yet powerful image editing program that was originally designed to replace the Paint program. So it's very similar in usage. And it's a free! That and lots more in the weekly newsletter, datadoctors.com/help. If you want to see where you can sign up to get that newsletter in your inbox every single week. Before we went to break, we were talking to Bob about encryption and the banks. And Bob's question is, well, shouldn't I stay up on this stuff so that I can make a decision about which bank I want to bank with?
Right.
And certainly, Bob, you could do that.
Yeah, just online banking.
Yeah, no, I understand. So let's flip this around. Let's say you're in the brain trust of the bank. Okay, you got a couple of different issues you got to deal with. Traditionally, the strongest level of security that you can put in there for any kind of technology also creates the most barriers to access, right?
Right.
Which creates more user problems. Okay, so are they going to lose more customers because it's so difficult to get in? Or are they going to lose more customers because somebody did research and that there's some theoretical proof that an encryption code might get broken by some, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, they're just as cognizant as you are, if not more cognizant of this issue, every single day. And because if there was a big problem with encryption that they were using, you know, they'd be exposed, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, and you got to understand, anybody that's in that position, they have to wrestle with all these things. There's usability on one end and there's security on the other, and they're on complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
They have to find that medium between the two.
Exactly. So they have to take calculated risks on these kinds of things. And at the end of the day, most of these encryption breaking programs and schemes, have you seen what it takes to actually break the encryption?
Yes. I've looked at this stuff, and that's why I'm asking about the...
I mean, you'd have
like
to have...
The RC4 encryption, it's been around for, I don't know, maybe a decade or longer. And it seems to be the weakest one, and most of the banks use it.
And that's exactly what I was the point I was making. From a usability standpoint, it's going to give the largest number of people a reasonable chance of secure connections, right? Because nobody's actively breaking that encryption all over the internet, because if they were, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You follow me?
Yeah.
So don't get too caught up on that end of it. It's almost like the conspiracy theory.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
yeah.
You can spend all your time talking about that, and really, at the end of the day, these banks have a business to run, and they're on this.
And their business depends on this.
Are they going to make?
They're running their business on my hard-earned money.
I understand, but and are they going to make mistakes? Absolutely. Are they going to fix those mistakes? The thing about the internet, unlike any other, like if there was a security breach in the old days, right, and there was some issue with, nobody'd hear about it. Think about what happens in today's internet world. The minute an exploit or a problem is discovered, it is all over the place. Well, what does that force these businesses to do? React very, very quickly. And because they're the bank, and if they're the ones that screwed up, you think that you're going to be, at risk? Your money's going to be fine because it was their fault.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Don't
get too caught up on that. Now, if you're doing it just because you love encryption and you love numbers and, I don't know, you have no life.
No, actually, because of my health, I'm being forced to do more and more online because I'm becoming homebound.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. And it's critically important. You know where your biggest risk is? Not in this encryption area.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're very cognizant of what you do on your computer. If other people use your computer, that is your biggest.
Yeah, no,
that is,
nobody goes near this one.
So what you do and how you do things and what you download and what you connect with, I'll give you a good example. Robert brought up a very, very convincing email that came in his inbox today, right?
Yeah, it was very convincing.
From?
PayPal.
Do you have a PayPal account, Bob?
Yes, I do.
Telling me to update the account info.
I'm telling you right now, folks, if you have a PayPal account and you ever get any kind of an email from PayPal, always assume it's a phishing scam. Always assume it's somebody trying to grab information so they can take over your account. But there's a simple thing that anybody that has a question as to whether this is legitimate or not can do to make absolutely sure that they don't get swindled by these phishing scams. So if you stay tuned, Bob, appreciate your call. And that was good information about encryption. But stay tuned because we're going to give you the absolute fail-safe way to never get taken by a phishing scam in your email. It's the Data Doctors on the Computer Corner, 602-277-5827. A couple lines open. We're going to try to save your identity as much as we can today. And more importantly, give you good information so that you don't freak out. You have good tools. It's Ken, Clay, and Robert back after this. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. It is the Data Doctors in the house. Ken, Clay, and Robert here to help you. Hey, I got a question for y'all. Do you Twitter?
Yes, I do.
Of course you guys do.
Yes, I do.
And how about you out there listening? Do you Twitter? Because if you do, you can follow me online or at Twitter at The Data Doc. The Data Doc. Had you been following me this week, here's the kind of stuff you would have heard. You would have gotten a direct link to the advice column on how to get off these people search sites, PIPL.com and some of these others. People are starting to get freaked out about, oh my goodness. If you're a registered trademark holder, if you're a business that has a registered trademark, someone may have grabbed your Facebook identity last night because they opened up those vanity URLs.
Yes, they did.
If you are a trademark holder, I have a link for you to dispute it and to regain your trademark so that you can get that vanity URL back or in your control. There's another link that I put in earlier in the week, 7 Things Electronic Salespeople Won't Tell You. Of course, we gave you the heads up about the vanity URL earlier in the week. And so lots and lots of little information. We obviously compile our tips and tricks and what have you once a week through our newsletter. We've got 30,000 of you subscribing to that. And so obviously...
Great information.
It's a good way to get information. But if something comes up that I think is interesting during the week, I either have to wait for it to go in the newsletter at the end of the week, and sometimes it's not relevant, right? It's too late. Or it's just not necessarily newsletter content, so that's where the Twitter account really comes in handy. And it's also an easy way for you to, in a very concise way, shout out back at me, ask a question, do whatever. So if you're out there on Twitter, the Data Doc, you can follow us during the week, and we'll see if we can't help you that way as well. So, but before we went to break, we were talking about phishing scams. By the way, a couple lines open, 602-277-5827. Phishing scams are very, very, very common, and they're getting more clever. The bottom line is anything you get an email that's from an organization you do business with, PayPal, your bank, any of those places, just assume it's not legitimate. But here's how you check. There's two things you can do. One, you can take the title of that email. In your case, what did it say?
It actually was
account notification, right?
Yep.
So if you type that, if you go to Google and type important account notification and then space paypal.com, right? Because it's supposed it came from PayPal. And you have Google search for that. Well, lo and behold, the first four or five things that come up in Google is scam, phishing scam, phishing. Now you've already added to that level of suspicion, right? And it's now almost absolutely a given that it was a phishing scam. But here's how you make absolutely sure. It's real simple. Nothing to remember other than you manually go. Don't click on any links in the email. Go and open up a new browser session and type in paypal.com. Go log into your account. Because if, in fact, PayPal wanted you to update your profile, they would tell you the next time you logged in. Duh.
As soon as you log in.
Right?
There'll be a notification right there telling you you need to update this or take this action.
Same thing with your bank.
Yes.
Same thing with your online brokerage accounts. Don't just assume everything that comes in email is a scam.
You have to be paranoid.
Correct. And if you approach it that way, you've just dramatically reduced the possibilities of falling for one of these phishing scams because they are getting extremely clever. And if you take these emails at face value, and if you take even a website that looks like, I mean, they can take and copy your bank's website. It'll look exactly the same as PayPal, look exactly the same as your bank. And unless you're looking very, very closely at the URLs and really understand all of that, you're going to be easily fooled.
It could just be one character off. Look at it, and instead of saying Chase, it could say Chase with two E's or something like that.
Chase
know?
One.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So
you know what's even more clever is that the email actually had links to anti-fraud.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Or they'll say... Yep. This is sent in compliance with the CAN Spam Act and all, you know, the spammers. They do the same thing. They're trying to legitimize the message by putting all of that official stuff in. The bottom line is don't trust any of it. Do those two things and you'll always be safe. All right, let's go back to the phones here and let's talk to Henry. Henry, you've got a problem with Internet Explorer 8.
Yes, I do.
What kind of problem?
When I'm following links, and as you get four or five links deep, all of a sudden the links start responding. Funny thing is, if I close the browser, work my way right back to where I was at, the same link will open right up.
As long as it's not the seventh or eighth time that you tried to click on something?
Second time around, I'm right back up to the seventh or eighth time, and this time it'll open back up.
Now, this is, when you say six or seven clicks deep, are you talking about within a particular website or just the sixth or seventh click of anything?
Of anything. You know, when you follow one link, then you go to another link and you follow another link.
But is it always in succession like that, or is it could you if you go back to Google and start to click on links, does it not work?
No, sometimes I can go back, open up a new tab, type in google.com, and nothing happens.
Okay.
I close the browser and do it again, Google pops right up.
So the browser itself is shutting down, and when you close it and open it back up, it starts to go again. I'm still working my way through all of these ridiculous new updates in IE8 as far as the security issues.
Right, right.
What I would suggest you do, we suggest this to everybody, do you have Firefox loaded on this machine?
No.
Okay, load Firefox on this. Go to Mozilla.com. Firefox is a free alternative browser. It's actually faster. I like it better.
It's very similar to IE8. It's stripped down version of it, and I love it.
Well, actually, guess where Microsoft got all their ideas for a lot of the new features?
Really?
The reason why you're going to hear this almost every week that I'm hosting this show, is having two browsers gives you a very quick way to determine where this problem is, okay?
Uh-huh.
So if you follow my logic, if you have Internet Explorer and it's doing this, and you have Firefox and it's not doing it, then you know it is the browser.
Okay.
If Firefox is doing the same thing, then it's probably a piece of software, a security program that you have installed on your computer that's stopping things just because it's trying to save you from yourself.
Now, if you want a third option, you could always download Safari. Give you one last...
Safari, now that's that stuff from
Apple.
They don't need any more help. Stay away from Safari.
Safari just released their new browser, Safari 4.
I'm kidding. It's becoming... The cool thing is there's no such thing as too many browsers. You can have all these browsers on there and play with them and decide. But having two different browsers just for diagnostic purposes is fantastic these days. Did you understand the line I was trying to take you down?
Yeah.
Because otherwise what you end up doing is you spend all this time trying to solve the problem on one end when it happens to be on the other end.
I see.
So you could be your security software is doing this. It could be the browser because it's a new browser is doing it. And this is a quick way to figure that out.
Okay.
And then once
once
you figure out that it's happening in both browsers or not, then you at least now you know to start looking at your security software, maybe disabling it temporarily to see if it stops. Or if it only happens in IE8, then you start searching the internet, searching Google for IE8, you know, link failure problems.
Okay.
You had another question?
Yeah. I have a couple of SD memory cards.
Uh-huh.
They have data on them that I really need to get off of these cards or
now,
use
Clay,
the cards or something else.
Clay is the head of our data recovery lab. He never hears that.
Oh, no. Remember the last time I heard that? No.
It's his whole life. So you chose the perfect show to call because the man with the most information and knowledge about that is sitting right in front of me.
Well, tell me about your situation.
When I put the card in, it says that the card is set to write protect, but it is not set to write protect.
And this is a SD card, is that correct? And with the SD cards, there is a little plastic piece on the side that would allow you to manually write protect or unwrite protect that card. And you've tried both settings on that card?
Right. Both settings, it will say that the card is write protect. I go to the card's properties, and it shows how much space is left on the card. So I try and put data on the card, and it says the card is full.
Yeah, well, so is this happening on all SD cards or just this one?
No, it's just I have two of them.
But, okay, so what you need to do now is same thing I was talking about with the browser. You need to put these cards in somebody else's SD reader, and you need to get somebody else's SD card and read it in your reader. We got to figure out, is this the reader in your machine that's the problem, or is it these cards?
Also, are you using this for taking pictures in the camera?
Yeah, and there's pictures on them I need to get off.
And so those, and were you able to take additional pictures using that camera with these SD cards, or the fact that it's write protected?
No, the camera was damaged, so... I got the new camera and tried to use the card and the camera, and I couldn't. So I tried it on my computer, and I couldn't.
Okay, so it's starting to sound like it may be the cards got damaged.
Very, very probable,
and
yes.
It's probably not something you're going to be able to just click a few buttons and get to. So, I mean, there are programs out there that claim to recover stuff off of camera cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, you know, the old Clint Eastwood movies where you feel lucky, punk. I mean, you get one shot, right? And if it works, you're thinking this is the greatest. And if it doesn't, not only did you not get the data, you probably destroyed any chances of ever getting the data.
We do see that every day.
So if this is really, really critically important stuff, you might want to have it looked at by a professional recovery organization. If it's not that important, then you can search for these utilities that are out there that are inexpensive that will give you, you know, they'll try to go and kind of recreate it. Sounds like what's happened is the table of contents that allows the computer or your camera to understand how things are sorted, that got messed up.
Yeah, especially you had said, did this failure or did this problem occur after the camera failed? Is that correct?
It recurred. It happened after the camera failed.
Okay. And it very well could have been, just like Ken said, that it may have been the camera that caused this damage. This is something that we see on a very regular basis. And as Ken was saying as well, with the table of contents, if you don't have that, you can't access the data, you can't pull it off, and a professional data recovery company is your best option if these are important pictures for you.
Without seeing it, that sounds like, because of the fact that it's giving you all these incorrect readings,
yeah,
it sounds like that's what's happening. So that's those are your two choices. You can, you know, throw the dice and try one of these do-it-yourselfer programs, but if they're really, really important, then you might want to have a professional look at it. And a lot of professionals will look at it for you, you know, quickly and kind of give you an assessment so you can make a decision. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to figure it out. Okay?
That sounds good.
All right, Henry, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
And with that, we're going to go to break. It opens up a line at 602-277-5827. The Data Doctor's in the house protecting your ID.
That's right.
That's your identity. Stay tuned.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
no! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're talking about identity theft, the myths, the facts, and what you can do
to protect yourself.
Yes. What you can do, your little old self, to protect yourself, and what you basically have no control over. We're going to go over some of those items in the second hour here. Of course, your calls and questions. Got lines open at 602-277-5827. Doesn't have to be about ID theft. It can be about just about anything. But most of the studies show that nearly 10 million people were victims of identity theft last year, you know, in 08 in the United States. So it's a, you know, it's a sizable percentage. The reality is the vast majority of those folks became victims of identity theft not because of their computer and not because of the internet, but because they had their wallet stolen, somebody broke into their house. The old non-tech, low-tech ways of gaining people's identity. If they can get a hold of your driver's license, your credit card number, whatever, they'll try to assume your identity in any number of ways. Again, 602-277-5827. Before we go back to the phones or anything else, let's do one of the most important segments, if not the most important segments during this 2 hours. It's our Geek Speak of the Week. Try to educate you on a term that you may or may not have heard. Certainly after you hear it here, you'll be more educated and more knowledgeable and sound really cool at the next cocktail party.
Oh, yeah.
Robert, take it away.
All right. Well, this week's Geek Speak of the Week is image spam.
Image spam. What, pray tell, is image spam?
Image spam is a very creative way that spammers are actually sending out spam. It's avoiding the text-based spam filters.
And so they put their spam message into an actual image.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So if you understand, folks, how spam filters work, I mean, email, let's back up. Email was never intended to be anything other than a simple way to send text messages. And I don't mean like your cell phone text messages, but messages in a simple text format from one person to another.
And it has evolved quite significantly.
Sure. Now they want to do these big fonts and these colors and all these things. So what spam filters have traditionally done is look at all aspects of your message and score them. So a lot of you that have spam systems that rank these things, they tag certain messages as possible spam. It's generally because they're going off of a numbering system. They're giving it a grade. And so whoever administrates your mail system decides what the number is. So if you get a score 7 or higher, it's automatically spam. If it's 5 to 7, it's possible spam. Anything under 5, let it through. That's essentially what happens. So the scoring systems are very complicated. They look at everything from the text itself, of course, the word Viagra and all these. Those are simple things. And the bad guys have figured out all the different ways to get around
them. But I still get those.
No. Well, and you will. There's no way to stop getting, because the guys that are doing that are amongst the most sophisticated in getting around those spam filters, and you'd have to ask, well, why is that? Well, take a guess why Viagra messages are so common. Is it because everybody ignores them?
I think it's because people click on those.
Because
things.
Yeah, there's small percentage of people do actually respond and actually do buy the Viagra from those ads.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as that's happening, these guys, there's money in it. These guys are going to keep doing it because they've figured out how to get these messages sent out for free without having to pay for it, so it doesn't really matter if they send out 10 million and, you know, 0.1% of the people respond. That's a big number. So, but getting back to image spam became very, very common about 2 years ago when the spammers figured out, well, if we put our spam message into a picture, right, the spam filters can't read the text. Therefore, we'll get past them. And for a while, it worked. Now the opposite has happened. Most spam filters look at an image as a potential image spam component, and so your spam score goes up automatically whenever you have an image in any kind of an email, whether it is embedded in there or as an attachment, that kind of thing, if there's an image involved. So
could be a signature, could right. be a icon or a logo very, for your company.
So those of you that love those really cool creative signatures, right, where you have your corporate logo, maybe you have a picture yourself or that kind of thing, that's all cool and all. But all those images instantaneously, before you have anything else in the message, you've automatically upped your spam score, right? Just because of those images are in there. So if you're doing that in your signature because you think it's cool, think twice about it, because you're probably limiting the number of people that are actually going to get it because of that. Now, heaven forbid you're doing that and you're in the mortgage industry and you have the word mortgage tattooed all over your title and you're actually talking about the mortgage in your email and you have these images embedded, mm-hmm. because your spam score is going to be significantly higher than the average Joe, because of these keywords that are out there. So you have to really understand all of this to understand, you know, why these things are out there. And you got to figure out, at the end of the day, email is about simple text. The simpler you make it, the easier it is for the people on the other end to get it, and more likely they will get it and won't have these translation issues. So take that with a grain of salt as far as what you decide to do. She hung up. There was somebody on the phone. I can't remember her name, but she called in about these spoof emails. And how come these spoof emails have my address as if I'm the one that sent it?
Yeah, how are they getting that?
How are they doing that? Well, anybody out there can spoof the sender address. It's real easy. These emailers do this all the time.
Just masking it, that's all.
They're trying to make it more difficult for you to track down what's going on. So that kind of thing. Now, she also said that she's on AOL and was getting runtime errors, but only in AOL. Gosh, have we heard that before, huh? Folks, those of you on AOL, it's called Almost Online for a reason. AOL stands for Almost Online. AOL has a proprietary network. They have proprietary software. It's a nightmare.
And that's an understatement.
And that software, the runtime generally means it's trying to run a particular program, and a security program or something shutting it down. Those of you that are just absolutely adamant that you're going to stay on with AOL, did you know you could go to AOL.com and log in there using a standard browser and bypass a lot of the tragedy that comes from the AOL software, but still get all of that functionality,
all the functionality,
as if you were using the AOL software?
You there still you. Even get that little You Got Mail.
You got all that. So if you're on AOL, do yourself a favor. Uninstall the AOL software and just use a web browser and go to AOL.com. You'll have far fewer problems the rest of your life.
Internet Explorer, Firefox, Safari, everything works.
And someday, consider joining the rest of us on the real internet. Back to the let's see here. Let's back to the phones here, and let's see if we can help Bonnie. Bonnie!
Oh, yes.
You called us on the helpline, 602-277-5827, and you need help.
Yes, I do. I thought I knew what I was doing, but I certainly found out I didn't, and neither did my son. My son-in-law is a guru, and I didn't ask, but I went ahead and downloaded the IE8.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I was working with Ancestry.com, and I was going to print off some census reports, except I couldn't. So I contacted my son. He said, well, click on the priority. It was so large, he said it would probably take a dozen pieces of paper printing, and then I'd have to tape them all together. So I contacted Ancestry.com, and they said, oh, well, first mistake is 8 is not compatible with them at all.
Yeah, now Internet Explorer 8 is a very new browser that does a lot of stuff, and there are a lot of incompatibilities on that. And Bonnie, I didn't realize how close to a break we were. I want to put you on hold for a second because I want to hear all of this, because I think you got some good information to share with everybody. Internet Explorer 8, absolutely. This is where it goes back to. You got to have Firefox on your machine so that you can get around these problems quickly. It is the Computer Corner. We got more about that with Bonnie here. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
Safely.
ID theft.
We are back.
I hope ID theft is not back. ID theft is something we recommend highly that you avoid engaging in, either as a victim or a perpetrator.
Would you almost say even writing checks is kind of getting a little nervous now? Your account information, routing number, all there.
Well, there's certainly people that we've had instances where people forged checks from checks that were written. So absolutely, that's where these electronic transactions are easier to track, less likely to be forged, and there's pros and cons. There's no perfect way to transact business these days, but the old school method is generally one of the easiest ways to get taken. I uphold this data as proof that it's not a technology issue. Arizona consistently ranks in the top, if not the top, state for identity theft.
I think it is number one right now.
It has been on and off for years, right? So why Arizona?
You got me.
Is it because we're all so high-tech in Arizona?
I can't imagine that's the reason.
Why is it? Think about how many elderly folks live in Arizona. Think about how many times elderly folks are victimized by everybody and everything. How much easier it is to, mug them. How much easier it is to, figure out what they're doing. And, it's that has something to do with the fact, there's a lot of people perpetrating the crimes on the elderly in states, Florida.
Yeah,
Arizona,
Florida, I was going to say that. Florida's in the
that have
state
a
for them.
High elderly population. There's also, with Arizona, the population changes. It migrates, right? So you have a lot of people from other, even Canada, or foreign countries like Texas that come in during the winter.
We don't want to call them snowbirds, but they do.
They
spend some time here.
They are absolutely snowbirds.
Okay.
So is technology and the internet exposing you to identity theft? No question. Is it the reason why identity theft is out of control? Absolutely not. It's a contributing factor, but the reason identity theft is out of control is because the identity thieves are figuring out ways to take advantage of that information quicker these days.
Fine-tuning their efforts.
Right. So it's really a combination of things. So just protect yourself with a lot of the resources we have posted, and everything will be all more gooder. Speaking of more gooder, Bonnie was trying to print something out of Internet Explorer on Ancestry.com. She finally got through to, she got past her in-house guru, right? Your son-in-law?
Right.
Right? Went right to Ancestry.com, which, by the way, it's amazing how many people don't think of taking that step to figure out, I'm trying to do this one thing with this one site, maybe I should contact them. So kudos to you for doing that. And they alerted you right away to say, no sale. Right. Not going to happen. So your options were to go back to Internet Explorer 7, or I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, this is where if you had Mozilla's Firefox already installed in your machine, you wouldn't have missed a beat. You could have just switched over to Firefox, gone to Ancestry.com, and printed.
Well, that's what I'm learning now, but am I going to mess things up if I go ahead
Firefox, I highly recommend. In fact, I use that as my primary browser and only use Internet Explorer when a site requires me to.
As do I.
Same
Most people in the tech world really love Firefox. It tends to be a little faster. You can tweak it. There's all kinds of cool stuff that goes on. But the bottom line for you, Bonnie, is use whichever one you're comfortable with, but always have both of those, because anytime you're having a problem on the Internet, the first thing you want to do is switch to the other browser.
Okay.
And that'll tell you very quickly, is it my internet connection, is it my computer, is it my browser? Because, if you switch over to the other browser and the same thing is happening, you know it's not Internet Explorer's problem. If you switch over to the other browser and it works, bada bing, bada boom.
Gotcha.
A, you figured out where the problem is, and B, you found a workaround.
Now, should I try to restore my toolbars first before I do Firefox?
No, they're completely unrelated.
Okay.
Do whatever you want in Internet Explorer. We were talking off the phone. You already went back to Internet Explorer 7, right?
Right.
Okay. So your critical things that you want to do with the browser, what you want to do is monitor that. So watch Ancestry.com's support section to see when they say, hey, we finally got it working with Internet Explorer 8.
Okay.
Anything else that's important to you, your banks, anything else like that, make sure, that they say Internet Explorer 8 is compatible with our service or our site. And that'll tell you when it's time to upgrade to IE8.
Okay.
Make
all
sense?
Right. Very good. Now, can I just go to WW Firefox, or should I just go?
Leave the W's out.
Okay.
And type in firefox.com or mozilla.com, either one. But don't put it into your search engine. Put it right into the address bar so it goes directly to mozilla.com.
Okay.
MOZILLA.com. And there's just one big button that says free download Firefox 3.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Good luck, Bonnie.
Bye-bye.
And that's how it works. We make up an answer. People like Bonnie believe it. And we move on. It's the Data Doctors. Got another half an hour to go. We're talking about identity theft, the myths, the facts, and what you can do to manage it yourself. Coming up, I'm going to talk about something that's completely out of your hands when it comes to your identity being stolen and what you can do about that. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about ID theft. We've talked about some of the things that are very common. We've got lots of resources posted at datadoctors.com/radio. But in this segment, I want to talk about one of the things that's out of your control when it comes to identity theft, and that is something known as a data breach. And you've heard this year after year now, more and more stories of a laptop from the Social Security Administration gets stolen that has, you know, 100,000 names on it. Somebody hacks into a credit card company's database and gets at that. Those are data breaches that it doesn't matter how safe you are on your computer, doesn't matter how much you do to protect your identity at home.
There is nothing you can do about that.
If your information is in a database, which they're in databases all over the place, from the government to commerce to banking to what have you, and there's a data breach, I mean, that particular thief has access to your information. So the only thing you can do when you hear about a data breach of that nature and you are a customer of that organization, by and large, what's going to happen is that organization is going to say, we're going to get you a free credit monitoring package so that you can watch to see, you know, if your credit or your account is attempted to be accessed. Or you can put a credit freeze or a fraud alert. There's various things you can do. So if you find that you are a member of an organization who did experience a data breach, immediately go look at their website, go listen to all of the propaganda that's coming out from the company. They will tell you what you can do to protect yourself, and usually they're going to foot the bill to put these protective measures in place. Anytime you think there's a problem, whether it is a, you know, somebody broke into your house or somebody stole your laptop or you think somebody got you online, you can either put a credit fraud alert, which means you're alerted every time somebody applies for credit with your account or with your information, or you can put a freeze on there, which requires the credit agencies to come and check, which is a big hassle if you're trying to buy something. But those are both protective tools that are in place that you can yourself go and apply for, and a lot of times they're free or very inexpensive. So check those things out. The number one tool to fight identity theft that should be in your house. Do we have a drum roll? The number, yeah, close.
Yeah, that was pathetic. Okay.
You want to take a guess? You want to take a guess? The number one tool that you should have to fight identity theft in your life.
You know what, Ken? I don't know.
You got me.
A paper shredder. Yeah. You should have a paper shredder in every home and every office. And make sure and get the ones that are capable of shredding credit cards.
I was going to say fireplace, but yeah,
fireplace?
That's probably not great for the environment.
Yeah,
so.
not so much.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a shredder of some sort, they're not that expensive, that is the thing that you should be using so that anything that comes through your home or office that has any information that might be used, because remember we said it's four times more likely that they're going to steal or attempt to steal your identity through those non-technical means than they are through the internet or the computers. Computers is pretty straightforward what you're going to do, and we're not saying that you shouldn't protect yourself there. But don't forget, your back end is wide open with all this paperwork that's out there, and that's where most people forget what's going on. So,
or even just go paperless on your bank account.
Yeah, that's called a panacea. Oh, yeah, I mean, on your bank account you can. Yeah, you can go paperless. But what happens when they send you a credit card that's pre-approved?
Uh-oh.
Of course, I guess they'll stop doing that now that there's no credit available anywhere.
So that's true. That's
maybe that's
true.
The silver lining in the credit crunch is no more of these.
I haven't gotten
ridiculous...
quite as many of those as I used to, that's for sure.
All right, back to the phones. Let's see if we can help Dave. Dave, you have a question about Outlook.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Could you possibly pick up the phone so that the rest of Radio Land can actually hear you clearly?
Yes, can you hear me now?
No. Are you on a speakerphone?
No.
Are you on a headset?
Yeah, no.
No? Because it's like
can
really
you hear me?
Bad audio. Okay, anyway, give it a shot.
Okay,
I was thinking about buying a new BlackBerry.
Okay.
And didn't know if I should continue to use Outlook or a web-based email program.
Well, that's second from the BlackBerry, right? Or what association are you making with the BlackBerry to Outlook?
I'm trying to consolidate my contacts and emails. And
okay, so you would use Outlook as your syncing program.
Right.
Okay, well, the BlackBerry comes with its own little desktop organizer that you can use, or most people, especially in the corporate world, do use Outlook to... is this you personal, or are you doing this through a business?
This is my own personal use.
Okay, because a lot of businesses have an Exchange server, which is a completely different configuration. So, but from the standpoint, do you use Outlook now?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so, and you use it for the contacts and the calendars and everything, right?
Right.
And it's not Outlook Express, it's the full-blown Outlook.
It's the full-blown Outlook,
okay,
yeah.
So then it's ready-made. If you get a BlackBerry, you can just tell the BlackBerry that I want to sync the information that's on my BlackBerry with my Outlook.
Now, what about push email?
It depends on which vendor you go with. Whoever the cell phone vendor is.
T-Mobile.
Yeah, so you get with T-Mobile and say, this is what I want to do. Make sure whatever you're looking at in your plan has the ability to do the things you want to do. But typically speaking, you can have your BlackBerry go and check your standard POP account.
And one more thing, a suggestion here that we see oh so often in the data recovery realm. Make sure that the first time you sync up that device with Outlook, that you're pushing all of the information from Outlook to the device, the contacts, everything, so that you're not overwriting any of the information syncing the opposite way. After that, you can set up a two-way sync, so any new contacts created on your BlackBerry or on your Outlook or in your Outlook will be synced up accordingly.
So that first time, make absolutely sure you understand which direction the data is going on,
exactly.
The, on the sync setting is what he's saying. Because we, on occasion, people get the sync setting incorrectly, and what they do is they take their blank phone and they tell inadvertently their sync software to overwrite everything in Outlook.
And they lose everything.
Or the other way around. So
yes.
They have a blank Outlook.
Email, I don't have to worry about having web-based email or Outlook.
Well, web-based email would be horrific on the BlackBerry, having owned a BlackBerry. I'm now an iPhone advocate. But the BlackBerry, even using webmail through an iPhone, is horrific compared to using the email client that's built into the BlackBerry. So you can still use, is your webmail connected so that it's the same account as your Outlook?
Yeah.
Okay, so the reality is you're probably going to use all three depending upon the situation you're in. So let me give you a scenario where you might still want to use your webmail. You're on the road, you have your BlackBerry, but you don't have your laptop or your computer.
Right.
You pop into an internet cafe or a library or something, right?
Right.
So then you would use your webmail on that computer. Okay, so what you want to make sure is that all this stuff is coordinating so you're not... So the big danger in using too many different programs is, okay, I replied to this guy, but which one did I reply to? Because it's not going to show up in all three.
Okay.
You see what I mean? There'll be certain things that won't show up in all three because it's specific to the unit that you're using at the time.
So I need to decide which program I'm going to use to stick with that program.
Well, your best bet is the Outlook BlackBerry combo.
Okay.
Right? So just remember that when you reply, again, this really depends on the kind of mail system that you have. If you have an IMAP account and you have some of these others, you possibly could set it up, or Exchange, you can set it up where the replies do show up. But if it's just you and your Outlook, what's going to end up happening is if you reply to somebody on the BlackBerry, it's not going to show up as a reply on your Outlook.
Right. So you have to sync it.
Well, even after you sync it, sometimes, depending upon what you have set up, it may not even show up in that particular sent items. Okay? So you have to look at all those things and understand that those kinds of things could happen.
Okay.
So, but I mean, for the most part, what you want to do, it's wonderful. What you don't want to do is have your Outlook set up so that when it checks the mail, and you know how it downloads the mail?
Right.
That it pulls it down and removes it from your mail server, because that means then you're going to have some of the messages on your Outlook and some of them in your BlackBerry.
Right.
You're going to want to change the setting in Outlook to say, leave a copy of the message on the server and only delete it if I delete it.
Or you can set that.
I can still view it.
Well, that way the same messages download to both devices.
Right.
Or set it for a certain period of days. You know, you could have it for 5 or 10 days and then have it automatically delete from the server. That way you have the opportunity to get it on the other device.
Yeah, so you can set the setting in Outlook for that. Say after 5 days, after 30 days, just automatically remove the messages.
Okay.
All right?
Cool. All right.
But yeah, I mean, do you have a smartphone now?
I use a Dash. And I think it's junk.
You use a what?
It's a T-Mobile Dash.
Oh, is it a smartphone or is it just one that does text messaging?
It's a smartphone.
Is it?
It's, well, it thinks it is, but anyway.
It wants to be a smartphone, but it's kind of dumb.
It doesn't want to be a smartphone.
In your opinion, it's a dumb phone.
Right.
Well, I will tell you, the BlackBerry, from the standpoint of a smartphone, I mean, it's definitely a world changer.
Well, between the 8900 and the Palm Pre, what do you think is better?
You know, I haven't had a chance to directly work with the Palm Pre. I mean, it's getting a lot of props, and I don't know if it's overhyped or what. It did get Product of the Year at the Consumer Electronics Show earlier in the year. So if you're in a position to use either, and you're not on one of these platforms, do your homework, take a look at it, look at all the reviews, because there's tons of them out there.
Okay.
You go to CNET.com, you go to PCMag.com, there's a bunch of sites out there that will give you a lot of good information about one versus the other.
Okay.
Before you make the decision. You're in the enviable position of being able to say, well, I can choose any one of these.
Right.
And don't do what most people do, is they go ahead, I'll just get the BlackBerry, and then they find out 2 months later from a friend that got a Pre, is like, oh, man, I wish I'd have known that it did that. You know, I was like, well, you have the opportunity to not have to make that mistake.
Well, my Dash is 2 years old, and like I say, it's ready for a new one. So.
Well, there you have it. And it's official from Dave. The Dash is a dumb phone, not a smartphone.
There we go. There we go.
All right, Dave, thanks for calling in. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
And call us back and let us know how it all turned out.
Okay,
You know what? Here's your homework assignment.
Yep.
When you decide which one, call us back and tell us why you decided which one, because then you might help somebody else that's going to have this same question a month or 2 months from now.
Well, I'm leaning towards a Palm only because I used to have a Palm 650.
Yeah, but I mean, do your homework. Yeah. Make your decision.
Yeah.
Start playing with it and come back and say, this is the decision I made, and I made the right one, or I really screwed up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? This show is all about others learning from your pain. So if you experience any pain, please report back.
I will.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. And that is what it's all about, because the more pain you hear on this show, the more likely you're going to go, ooh, I'm going to avoid that one. Eric, Vince, and anyone else hang in there. We're going to go to break here. We still have time for you. We'll either get you on or off the air. 602-277-5827 or datadoctors.com/radio. Join us, won't you? Hey, Mac users, I got a warning for you.
No.
Two new Mac attacks surfaced here this past week.
I don't believe it.
The Big Mac attacks.
It can't be true.
They've discovered a new worm and a new Trojan that's specifically targeting Macs, the OS X, OS X. We've said on this show for, I don't know how long I can remember saying this, you people that think Macs are safer have got your head buried in the sand. Macs are not safer. They're less targeted. As we start to see more of these, this is a particular worm that generally was targeting PCs or Windows-based machines, and they've updated the code to say, well, let's just check to see if they have OS X, and if they do, go ahead and attack them too.
Wow.
There's this misnomer that the Mac operating system is somehow more secure. It is not more secure. In fact, the exploits or number of vulnerabilities, from a pure numbers standpoint, there was one company that actually found that there were literally more potential exploits in the Mac OS because it's based on some old Unix code that's been around and exploited for years. So the bottom line is Macs are safer today. And as long as, and the more Apple says Macs are safer, Macs are safer, Macs are safer, more people are going to migrate to Macs because they're safer, quote unquote. And then all the hackers are going to go, okay, let's start attacking them too. And then all of you people that bought a Mac just because you thought you'd never have to deal with this again are going to be upset. But you've heard it now. We've said it over and over again. That's the reality. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get a Mac. Doesn't mean you should get a Mac. It means you need to be educated about the reality. It's not that it's more secure. It is less targeted. And it's going to be more targeted as more people start to buy Macs.
Well, I mean, just from, you know, going from 2006 to, you know, 2008, we doubled the market share of Mac computers from 5 to 10%.
No, it went from like 4 to 6 or 3 to 6 or something.
I think it's a little closer
Not installed base. Maybe sales.
Sales.
But installed base. If you're a hacker, you're worried about the installed base, right? How many computers that are connected to the internet are running what operating system? Not how many people bought Macs versus PCs, because that number is certainly changing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but if you take all the machines that are connected to the internet, and you're a hacker, you're going, well, why the heck am I going to mess around with this small little number? of users when I can attack all, 95% of the people out there.
Got to get a big
that
return.
That is why Macs are safer for the time being. I take you no further than Firefox, the beloved browser we've talked about over and over again on this show and how much we love it. What was the thing that Firefox launched with? It's an open source free browser. Remember what they said, that there was just their claim to fame and why you should use Firefox over Internet Explorer?
You know what, I don't.
It was a safer browser.
Was it? I thought it was faster and safer.
Faster and safer.
Yeah. I do remember
and
that.
And guess what happened when 10 million people started using Firefox because it was safer?
It became less safer.
Because it became just as targeted as Internet Explorer. And you see Firefox now being attacked and exploits being discovered just as much as Internet Explorer.
What about Google Chrome? I've been hearing quite a bit
not
about
enough,
that.
Not enough people using Google Chrome mm-hmm. for it to be as big of a target as Firefox and Internet Explorer. It's a simple numbers game, guys. And that's everyone out there has to understand. It's just a numbers game. It's not a Ford versus Chevy. It's not a better or worse. The experience in the Mac and the usability, great. That's absolutely there. And it's certainly, if you're going to put grandma in front of a PC and grandma in front of a Mac, it's probably 50-50, but it's probably a little more likely she'll be able to get around. And great. I'm with you on that. But don't buy a Mac because they're safer in thinking that you'll never have this issue. Because if you're doing that and you're along with all the other lemmings that are doing that for that reason,
you're fooling
yourself.
You're
actually adding to the numbers that are going to cause it to become untrue. So, and again, you don't have to have antivirus software for a Mac today. That's going to change at some point in the future. Today, it's cool. So just be sensible about this decision and don't fall for this militant hype that's out there, so that you make the proper decision based on the reality of the world, not what you perceive to be the reality. And now let's perceive Vince's reality with his question about Windows XP cleanup.
Yes, sir. I started out with the old Millennium upgraded to XP.
Millennium? You Windows ME?
Yes, sir.
You know what? It wasn't Millennium. You know what ME stood for?
What?
Many errors.
You know, I didn't have any problems with it. I like their health system a whole lot better than I like XP.
Yeah, well, ME, you were the exception and not the rule.
I guess so.
This is true.
Being guys that were in the service business when that thing was all over the place, we can tell you. Yeah.
So, when I go to scan, when I go to disk cleanup, it brings up the usual things to clean up, and they're all highlighted and checked. But mm-hmm. there's some other things that aren't checked. Can
like?
I get rid of all those things?
What are they?
Oh, like a CHK.
Check files?
Check the files.
All the options that come up in the disk cleanup, you can safely remove all of them.
Okay.
That's why they're coming up that way. The reason they give you the option is some of them are like install files, where if you want to be able to not have to put your CD back in for certain programs from Microsoft, then you don't want to get rid of the install files.
Okay.
But if you're trying to clear space, then you want to clear all that stuff.
Okay.
All right?
Cool.
Hey, good luck, Vince.
Thank you.
Have fun out there. And that's going to wrap up the phone call section. In fact, that's going to wrap up the radio section. It's going to wrap up the email section. It's going to wrap up the Twitter session.
Man,
we're done. We get to go have a weekend. What do you think, guys?
Let's do it.
Again, if you want more information on identity theft, datadoctors.com/radio. See you next week.
It's just this simple. Thoroughbred Chevrolet customers always save more. Right now, save $5,000 on America's hottest new car, the all-new Camaro, with no dealer markups over window sticker. Thousands.